Good afternoon, everybody, and you're very welcome to the Art Show with me, Gráinne O'Reilly. To start off the show, let's have a little bit of Dervish, who were on the Late Late Show the other night. Here's Lone Shanachil. My rifle is ready, my saber is bright. Well, that was good. A little bit of Dervish. My first guest in the studio today is all the way from the Philippines, and his name is Francis, the lovely name, Francis Lanuza. You're very welcome, Francis.
Thank you very much for inviting me over.
And the reason I have you here is because you recently had an exhibition over in the Greenway Artist Gallery.
Yeah.
And I'm just so sorry we didn't get you in a couple of weeks ago because it's over now.
Well, we do hope that, you know, after the Greenway, that we'll have more opportunities to get, you know, the Hilom Hiraya art as well, you know, in future exhibitions. So we will keep you posted as well.
And where do you intend to show this after?
Well, Hilom Hiraya, which is in old Filipino, it means healing imagination. It's an exhibition with regards to visionary art, and that I've been doing over the past couple of years with my experiences with the Shuar medicine men and Natem, which is their healing ethnogen. So what I am really keen on doing is, you know, to get the word out using the art to a lot more people here in Ireland, because, you know, it is a very healing medicine. So if they can connect to the art and, you know, see that there is something more spiritual, more something amazing out there, you know, incredible visions and healing as well. So we would like to keep this exhibition on the road, you know, all throughout Ireland and probably, hopefully, in Amsterdam or New York or London in the future. But I'm kind of looking into opportunities as well of showing it again here in Westport very soon, probably in the Westport Arts Festival.
Oh, great. Can you reverse a little bit there? You started talking about medicine and healing.
Yeah.
And what has that got to do with art, and how can you connect up the two?
Well, the thing is, with the art that I've been doing is visionary art. With my experiences with the Shuar healing men from Ecuador, it was, I think, a few years ago when I started. It was in Amsterdam and some in the Netherlands as well. A friend of mine more or less introduced me, and I'm very thankful to him about this one. I painted something, and then he then looked at it and he said, okay, there's something to this art. I think you're ready for the experience of
it. Was it like a dream type of thing?
Well, the thing is, with visionary arts, it comes as dreams, visions. You suddenly get this boost of inspiration, and then you know that it's not coming from your own imagination alone. It comes in from something beyond. And so my role is not, you know, as an artist, is I am a conduit to the healing visions that come from, you know, the spirit of the medicine. You know.
What sort of medicine is this? It sounds fascinating.
Yeah. Well, it's called Natem. It's a form of ayahuasca. It's a sacred ethnogen. So it's a sacred substance. So in Ecuador, where they do it, it's a sacrament. So what it does, it's other than, you know, bringing out visions in people, it actually heals people. So a lot of people come to Ecuador to experience this medicine. It helps them with HIV, with cancer, with paralysis. And my friend actually was in Ecuador a few months back, and he was there personally with the Shuar men to see how they heal. And I think it's also in Switzerland and in the Netherlands that they're being able to bring the medicine in to help heal people. And in my experience, to, you know, open up this certain channel of art, because this is something I've never done before.
Well, I did see your exhibition over in the Greenway Gallery, and it has got a very strong Eastern influence, possibly leaning towards Buddhism. A lot of the figures and faces had a sort of a Eastern religious quality.
Mm. Well, that's the beauty. That's the kind of the beauty of the medicine. It picks up a lot of things from inside of you. It heals you. It connects you to who you really are. Before I took the medicine in the Netherlands, I was just an architect. I would paint geometric things, you know, abstract art. Nothing wrong with that, but, you know, that's what I felt was, you know, my boundaries. But ever since I took the Natem, it started opening up something more profound that's why it's visionary art. There's this man called Alex Gray from New York, and he is in charge of the Hall of Sacred Mirrors, if I'm not mistaken. So what he does is, with his experiences with other medicine, perhaps, he then gets this boost of spiritual inspiration and then starts to chronicle them in his art.
Well, it actually sounds like a mind-altering drug.
No, and it's not
in
the
some
drug.
Respect.
Yeah, it's not the drug. Again, clearly, again, this is an etherogen, so it's a very sacred medicine.
And what form does it take? Where does it come from?
It comes from sacred plants in the area. So they process it from a sacred root or a vine, and then they prepare it for hours and hours, and then in a certain ceremony, you then drink it, and then you journey.
Yeah, it's kind of along the Carlos Castaneda lines.
Well,
if I'm not mistaken,
I'm not really familiar with Carlos Castaneda. I'm sorry about that, but I think it is probably in that direction, or Alex Gray, as I said before. But again, this is sacred stuff. This is not it is there to help people and heal people. And I would vouch in a way that it has helped me to reconnect to something that I never had before, because, you know, it was hard growing up, but I knew that art was something that I wanted to do when I was a young kid. You know, ever since I was a young kid, I really wanted to do paint, draw.
Well, after seeing your exhibition over in the Greenway Gallery, I can say that there were quite a number of paintings. Mm. And did it take you long to produce this work?
The first kind of spur of that was after the first experience with the medicine. So I think it was 7 or 8 paintings that right the morning after, kind of like it was actually Easter morning. So that was very profound. So Easter morning, I just woke up, you know, in the best feeling that I've ever had in my life before, took a paper, jotted all of the visions down. And then over the span of, I think, 2 months, I was able to finish 8 paintings based on those visions. And then over the course of, let's say, 2 years, I was able to, you know, visions started to come again. And I said, yeah, I'm just going to chronicle this. It's coming from something that I've never done before. I've never painted in that style before, nor have I wanted to paint with diamantes before.
But you must have seen it in many places and absorbed it for it to come out again in this manner.
I'm not really sure. The thing is, I knew that this was coming from very deep within. I knew that it wasn't something that, you know, intellectually, I think that's the best thing. It's not something that intellectually I was able to just churn out. It just comes from something more profound.
Well, I want to talk to you a little bit more in a few minutes, because I know you're also an architect.
Oh, yeah.
But let's have a little bit of old-fashioned Joseph Locke here. Blaze away.
All right.
We'll make a bonfire of our troubles, and we'll watch them blaze away. And when they've all gone up in smoke clouds, we'll never worry should they come another day. And as the bonfire keeps on burning, happy days will be returning. While the band keeps playing, we'll let our troubles blaze away. Here we are, there's work to do, and don't let troubles trouble you. Bring them along and we'll turn them up. Bring them along and we'll burn them up. Throw them right into the fire. Watch the flames go higher and higher. Blazing away, blazing away. So wonderful day. We'll make a bonfire of our troubles, and we'll watch them blaze away. And when they've all gone up in smoke clouds, we'll never worry should they come another day. And as the bonfire keeps on burning, happy days will be returning. While the band keeps playing, we'll let our troubles blaze away.
Well, my guest here, Francis Lanuza, was stomping around the studio to that song. You like Joseph Locke, do you, Francis?
Yeah, I kind of like that certain marching vibe of that music.
Francis hails from the Philippines, and you're probably one of our guests from furthest away, should I say? I mean, we've had guests from America and various places, but you're the very first Far Eastern guest, and we're delighted to have you.
Well, thank you very much. When you were saying it off the air, I was actually really kind of surprised and shocked as well, and, you know, I feel very blessed actually being here. So thank you very much for inviting me.
I know you're an architect, so can you tell us a little bit about how you started down that road?
Well, I was I hailed from the Philippines, and I graduated from architecture school there I think in around 2008, and then I started practicing in Manila for 2 years, and then the opportunity came for me to come over and work in Brussels with Procter & Gamble. So they said, okay, the opportunity is there. I took a gamble, and they said, okay, you got the job in Brussels. So I moved to Brussels in 2010 and started working there, which in a way was very, you know, I felt that there was also another reason why I was there. It was not merely because of the career side of it, but, you know, it was there that I was able to connect to the medicine and to great artists as well. And then after that, when the contract wasn't renewed, I decided, you know, why not go to Ireland?
So you arrived here on a whim?
Yeah.
As a tourist?
Well, as a tourist, as doing work, finding work, you know, it's, I'm at a point in my life that I let the universe point me to where I need to go, and I'll just follow it.
Oh, that might be dangerous now.
Well, so far it has been really good, though. You know, the universe has been really kind to me, and signs have been popping up on things that I needed to do. So
you're blessed.
I feel I'm very blessed, and very I'm very thankful, actually. And you know, even this opportunity to be on radio is like, maybe there's a reason as well.
Possibly, you'd never know who's listening.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about your architecture practice.
Well, when I was in the Philippines, I was working in a company that specialized more on commercial designs, hotel offices, and that's the reason why I kind of got a job as well in Belgium. It allowed me to practice, you know, space planning. You know, I think my key learning from that one is that, what is healthy space? What can you do as an architect or as a designer to make the space healthier, happier? You know, how do you make people more productive? In the business side of it, that allows, you know, sales to shoot up. But as an architect and a designer, what can you contribute to help people to feel better about their space, to kind of own their space? And, as a practice in the future, that's what I want to do. I want to help people to get a vision of what they want in their spaces. How do I put their identity stamp on that spaces and make their workplace or their homes or their clinics to be healing spaces as well?
So would you be more an interior architect?
Well, over the past couple of years, I've been practicing more of interior architecture. But I still want to go back to, you know, building architecture. My dream, when I was in university, and this was another, you know, interesting turn in my life, when I was in university, my thesis was about a healing center, which helps promote the local Ayurveda practice, kind of the Philippines, called Hilot. So it's a center wherein alternative medicine is being practiced and taught, and And I met very interesting people along the way as well, including a health minister from the Philippines, and Dr. Jimmy, and he was very, you know, very, very helpful. You know, again, helpful people coming at the right time. So my life's goal, in a way, is to see it built. Maybe here in Ireland, you know, to bring, because I think that there might be a culture of healing here in Ireland before medicine, you know, before Western medicine, and we need to bring it up. And you need a nice healing space to do that.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Can we get back to your exhibition that you had over in the Greenway, which unfortunately is over now, so people who are listening can't go to see it.
Yeah.
But what they can do is have a look at your website.
Yeah.
Before we continue, can you name out your website?
Okay. Well, my main art website is Francis Lanuza. So FRANCISLANUZA at imagekind.com. So they can follow me there and see the art as well as a bit of explanation of where it all came from.
And is this art for sale? That's a by the way.
Ah, okay. Well, the art itself is not for sale. Again, what we want to do is to tour it around and make it an exhibition so that people can connect more to the medicine. And, you know, see if...
So you just want it to be viewed for the moment.
Yeah, but I am willing to have them for limited edition prints as well. And
okay.
I'm looking into the, you know, the cost as well for that one. But it is available very soon on prints and on cups or cards.
Okay, so for those who are listening, if you want to have a visual about what Francis is talking about, it's Francis Lanuza.
Mm.
So... I did see your exhibition, as I mentioned, and there's lots of little diamonds all over the paintings. What's the significance of that?
I think as a kid, I really like sparkly things. One can even say it's kind of like a magpie, syndrome, perhaps. But as a kid, I really loved sparkly things. And in a way, as part of the visions that I had with the medicine, you know, things sparkly. It was all bright. It was all sparkly. And something kind of in my gut said, you know, why don't you put gems in them? Historically, you have icon paintings from the Byzantine era. They're also meditative forms of art. The way they did icons was, you know, through prayer, contemplation, inspiration, and then long periods of painting. And I've noticed as well, as part of that paintings, is they embezzled them, the jewels.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah, with jewels. I was wondering if I got the word right. But they were putting jewels in them, and precious stones, and gold. Because it kind of gives you a certain divinity and, you know, light in it. And as you go around the exhibition as well, if you look at the painting from different angles, it's always different because of the shine that comes out of it. The glitter of it. Yeah, it's bedazzled.
You also had a type of installation in the corner of the gallery. Mm. And to me, it looked like a spider web with dew on it.
Yeah.
Because it just seemed to be covered in all these little diamondy things.
Mm. What I wanted to achieve with that installation was kind of something that popped into my mind. You know, part of the journey was going to the stars. Going through the universe, and I wanted to, you know, capture that feeling, that state where you have, rather than putting it on a flat surface, this is going to be three-dimensional, so you can walk around it, see it floating and sparkling. I knew I needed to use more sparkly gems in the future, so if Swarovski's out there. I wanted to kind of capture that spaciousness, universal light that it was.
So the universe is your limit?
Limitless. The universe is out there. I just wanted to, you know, in a way, to give a journey in it. The thing that I didn't do kind of great there was ask people to go under there. Because someone, you know, asked me, okay, can I pop under the installation? And he got, whoa, this is an amazing view. Because he was looking at the tunnel of a tunnel of jewels.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe in the future, I think Maybe that's actually an idea for the Westport Arts Festival. You know, make an a bigger installation.
So we're going to be seeing more of you, Francis, and more of your work.
I really do hope so.
Are you continuing to paint?
Yes. I'm just kind of in a way taking a break. My focus for now is helping out with the community enterprise that we're doing right now, Learning to Exhale.
Pardon?
Learning to Exhale. Yeah, it's this community enterprise on mindfulness.
Oh, yes. Mindfulness is quite a growing thing now.
Well, two people that my colleagues actually, Ralph and Suzanne. Ralph is he's an author in 11 languages and is also a health guru. You know, in his own right, he's amazing. And Suzanne, who is based from Balana, herself is a homeopath and a relationship counselor and she's worked with Women's Aid for 7 years. And they're the two ones who are doing these mindfulness courses all throughout Mayo now. We started in Foxford, and now it's grown to, I think, 3 towns, and we're starting one very soon in Westport.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So yesterday we were in Tesco's actually handing out flyers, and so what I'm doing now is helping them using graphic design, you know, to get marketing out, to invite people in as well, and so if people are interested, they can contact.
And where will this be held in Westport?
Well, we're still finalizing the venue, but most likely it's going to be. Not really sure. I'm not really
you
sure.
You just
yet.
Have to figure. Yeah. Well, give us a shout here at the station whenever you're ready to go with that.
Yeah, but if people are interested, because people are loving the courses. They're coming out, you know, sleeping better. They're dreaming better. I'm actually benefited from it myself, and that's why I want to learn from it so that in the future I could facilitate it as well back in the Philippines, because I could see here in Ireland people need mindfulness. Mm. It's been really stressful, you know, with all the things going on. Financially, the banks, the government, the suicides that are going on. So if we can give something, people, to give them a pause button with all of the things going on, and just let them breathe, give them a breather, then we're very happy, we're very fulfilled with the work that we're doing. So can I just, if people are interested actually, they can contact Suzanne at 087-192-9067, and they can like us on Facebook, Learning to Exhale Mindfulness Meditation. They can already, you know, kind of book up a spot there. And then once we hit 15 people, it's all systems go here in Westport. We're going to bring mindfulness to Westport next.
Well, Francis, it was fascinating talking to you.
Oh, thank you so much.
I think I learned something, and I'm sure we'll see you again.
Yeah, and again, thank you very much for inviting me over. I feel very blessed, actually, to be here. And
I
hope that the listeners actually enjoyed it as well.
I'm sure they did.
All right.
Let's play you out on Seahorses Blinded by the Sun.
Thank you.
Well, we have Liz Brown and Gertie Foley in the studio from St. Patrick's Drama Group, and you're very welcome, girls. What's the story? What's coming up?
Thanks a million, Grainne.
Thanks,
lovely
Grainne.
To be here. Well, we're just here to talk about our latest production. We start on Wednesday night with The Field by John B. Keane. We run for 5 nights from Wednesday until Sunday.
And that's up in Squirrel Park.
Yeah.
It starts at half past eight every night, and tickets can be booked through Dyer's Jewelers on James Street, 2558. Mm-hmm. Or just call into Greg and Marion and they'll fix you up with tickets. Tickets are going well because it's on the syllabus for one of the exams for the schools this year, so there's a lot of interest from the schools.
The junior search, yeah.
Junior search.
You were telling me off air there that the ending of the play is quite different to the film, which most people would be familiar with.
Yeah, it was. There are no cows going over the edge of the cliff.
Well,
we
that's
don't
a
bring
relief.
Any cows into St. Patrick's. But the play wasn't written with cows in it. It's quite different, actually, from the film. There would be, to me now, Gert, I don't know if you agree with me, but I think there's a lot more humour in the play than there is in the film.
The film is quite dark, and the original script for the play was changed when the film came out.
It was.
To coincide with the film more. The original play, and I think anybody that knows the original play would all agree that it's a much stronger script than the film. I know when I saw the film initially, I was very disappointed in it. But the play certainly has more depth in it than the film has, and it has more humour as well. I think the characters are better in the play. The play overall it's better than the film. I'm sorry if anybody doesn't agree, but that's my opinion.
Yeah.
Who are the stars? Who are the stars of this show?
We've a lot of stars.
We've 13 stars.
Well, are you two of them?
Gert here is featuring, and in fact, when St. Patrick's Drama Group did The Field in 1990,
yeah,
Gert also featured in that. And I'm very happy to say that we have four of the original cast from The Field involved on stage at this production. And others that were involved then are also involved in the production, although they're not on stage.
Liz herself is directing this production.
Right. Well, you're a seasoned director, aren't you, Liz?
Well, it's only my third time.
Well, that's pretty
I'm still
seasoned.
A learner. I think we'll always be learners, of course.
And I think this was a huge undertaking for anybody. I think we all realise that now. And as well as that, Liz has brought on 5 newcomers. It has always been the policy of St. Patrick's Drama Group to bring on at least one newcomer, if at all possible and if feasible. But Liz has really gone outside the boundaries and taken on 5 newcomers, and they're proven to be excellent.
Mm-hmm. Very
good.
Really
I think, Liz mentioned that four of the original cast around stage. We have Patsy Staunton, Lee McNamara, Lenny Grimes and myself, all doing different roles, yeah, which is lovely as well.
So you're doing different roles to
different
the original.
To what we did 13 years ago, yes.
It must be quite strange for you to be repeating the play, but yet see it from a totally different viewpoint.
Absolutely, and I found it difficult initially because I kept answering to the character of Mamie, which I played 13 years ago, and I'm now Maggie Butler.
The widow, yeah.
The widow selling the field. And the widow features in it much more in this edition than the original script. You know, so there are subtle differences like that. Patsy Staunton played the bird in the 1990 production. He's now playing Dandy, a lovely part. He has there's a lovely scene with himself and his wife, played by Joan Collins, mm-hmm, that I think that will bring the house down.
Yeah.
Lee McNamara is excellent as the bird. He's playing the bird this time. And he's excellent.
Are you also the casting director, Liz?
Yes.
Yeah. So yes, you decide what role suits what actor best.
Yes, we did. We held some readings earlier on, and there was huge interest in it. And those people, there's a lot of difficult decisions to be made, but I'm 100% happy with the cast I have. They're fantastic. I'm so proud of them. They've worked really, really hard for the last few months, and I'm delighted to have the old stalwarts in it, Marty Curry and Gertie and Patsy, and Lenny Grimes plays the part of the bishop, and he's a fantastic, beautiful part.
Lovely cameo role.
Beautiful
cameo
role. Yes, it is.
And I think, you know, we have to say at this stage, Tony Varley is excellent as the bull.
Yes, I would say it's his finest performance ever.
Yes, people will see a side to Tony that they haven't seen before. He's excellent. Mairead Ryan, who everybody is very familiar with on stage, plays the part of Mamie, the auctioneer's wife. And Killian Brown, Liz's son, plays Mamie's son in the play, Leamy
Flanagan. Yeah.
Killian is one of the five new people you brought on.
Killian is one of the five new people. Now, Gertie already mentioned Joan Collins.
Yeah.
Joan, a lot of people will know Joan from down the Quay Road, the Quay Hill. Her dad, Mick, was actually a founding member of the group in the early 60s.
Well, Liz, you brought in, and Gertie, you brought in a long list of St. Patrick Drama Group productions. And it's as long as my arm, and it's got tiny writing, so I have to wear my new glasses. But at the very top it says, established in 1964.
That's 1964. And we'll be celebrating our 50th anniversary next year. So we hope to mark the event with a special occasion. We'll be more about that anon. But we also hope to bring out a special publication. So I'd like to ask any of your listeners out there, if they were involved in St. Patrick's Drama Group in the past, if they had family involved, if they would have photographs, posters, programmes, anything, any memorabilia at all, could they please lend them to us? If they could bring them in to me, I will scan them and give them back to them on the spot so that we could use them in the publication for next year.
That's a great idea, and hopefully the word will get out there and spread around, and you'll have lots of photographs and old programmes and whatnot, as I suppose are the sort of things you're looking for.
Yes, yeah, we have a lot ourselves kept down through the years, but we'd like to get other ones if people have them out there, and I'd be delighted to meet with them or talk to them about it.
You were in London recently?
We were with our last production was Heatstroke, that was directed by Rosaline Herity and produced by Marion Moran. Great fun, good comedy, and we went to St. Joseph's in Wembley, St. Joseph's Social Club, and we had a great weekend there. We did it twice for them and they really enjoyed it. They love to have us there, and it's a very special time for
us. It's home from home at this stage.
It is home from home there, yeah.
Is that a big production in itself?
It's massive.
It's bringing yourselves and all the costumes.
Okay, Jim Hogan brought our set over, and it's been Thursday after we arrived setting up the set.
Mm-hmm.
And you completely have to build a stage and put up curtains and lights and amps and everything. It's a bare field, like, you have to start off with. So there's an awful lot of work involved in it, but it's all worth it. It's really well worth it, and fair play. We have a very good team in the group. There's a great sense of teamwork, and a lot of people that you would never see on stage who just do Trojan work for the group.
The behind-the-scenes people.
Yeah, people building
Absolutely,
sets.
Absolutely, yeah.
We have a gem in Danny McNamara who's built the last few sets with Paul Dunning, and he's just a gem.
He
puts so much work into it. Danny wouldn't go near the stage, not in fit. But this is what he loves to do, is design and build sets, and he's a very, very clever guy. And of course, producing this with me is Regina McCormack. She'd be well known by all for all her trips on the stage. And she's been very, very busy going around, and there's so much to do there with PR and organising people and organising venues and everything. It's an awful lot of work going on.
Well, you people, you don't get much of a break, to be honest. You're only finished one production when the next one is on the way.
We weren't even finished, Grainne, to be honest, before we had started reading this, and then we had to take a break while Heatstroke was going on. And then when Heatstroke was finished, and when they came back from London, it was all systems go. At this stage, I'd like to mention the other newcomers that we have on stage with us. We have Brendan Carl from the Ballinrobe Road. We have Brian Murphy, and we have Micheál McGrail. And it's lovely to see new people treading the boards and to see the excitement that they have for it for the first time. You know, I think it's enthusiasm, you know, I suppose the enthusiasm that they show spreads to all of us.
It does, yeah.
You know, Nuala Courage is our stage manager, and she certainly cracks a mean whip, gets us all organised there, makes sure we all have the props that we need. And I think any production, we couldn't do it without all the help that Pat Ward gives us with sound. So we have a huge group on stage and off stage. There's actually probably more people involved off stage, Liz.
Anna, is there space for anybody else to join? Are you looking for new members?
We are always looking for new members. Always looking for new members.
Yeah.
You know, if they come along on any of the nights, you know, they can talk to any of the group and we'll tell them what's involved. And
it's not all starring in the latest production.
No.
Quite a lot of it is behind the scenes work.
Absolutely, because people, as Liz said, like Danny McNamara, they don't want to go on stage. But there's a place for them. There's huge work to be done backstage and front of house. You know, and a production cannot go on without all those people as well.
I mean, not everybody can get a part either. You know, when you're doing readings and people are looking for parts, but a lot of the time people come in and read for a part and they don't get it, and unfortunately then you don't see them again.
All right.
But Fintan McMahon ran workshops in October, I think it was, and he had about 14 new people in there over a couple of weekends doing, they concentrated on one particular play, Country Boy.
Yeah.
And that's where I found Brendan Carroll and Micheál McGrail.
Yeah.
They were at that workshop and they showed, I saw potential in them, and now they're playing very good roles in the play.
And you were thinking away about the field.
I was indeed.
I need
but
somebody for this
role.
There
are other people that were at those workshops who read for parts, didn't get them, but they are going to be coming in now during the week, and they'll help selling tickets and doing front of house and sweeping floors. And
they could be ideal
meeting and greeting
and the part members of our group now, so it's great.
And they could be ideal for a role in a future production.
Absolutely. We like to rotate because we have such a big group. It's, you know, we don't like to have the same people on stage all the time. So it's lovely to rotate and see different people in different roles.
So are you looking forward to Wednesday?
Can't wait, I have to say. I am really excited.
It's easy for you to say, Liz, you won't be on stage.
No, I think everybody will be okay. There's no need for, well, you know, the nerves are no harm. To have a bit of nerve is good. Gets the old adrenaline pumping and lots of energy out there. I'm thrilled with the production. We have we had a good run through now on Friday evening.
We did, yeah.
And it was super. People will love it. I guarantee it's going to be a great production. Everybody will enjoy it.
I think the only member of the cast that we haven't mentioned is Andrew Pelham-Burns, who plays the Englishman that comes to buy the field. Again, there's a slight difference. In the film, it's an American, but in the play, it's an Englishman, always has been an Englishman. And Andrew, for anybody that remembers him from past productions, is excellent in this role.
Well, I really look forward to seeing it, and best of luck with it. Starting on Wednesday, finishing on Sunday, a run of 5 nights, starting at 8:30 p.m. in St. Patrick's School up in the hall where you
are
on Altamont Street. Thanks
for our second home at the minute.
It is. Thanks very much,
Liz
Brown
and
Gertie Foley from St. Patrick's Drama Group. I'm going to play now Cavan O'Connor, Love is Like a Cigarette.
What is love? You call it heaven above. star that shines in the night, a bird that sings in its flight, a flower that blooms in the spring. It's no such thing. Love is like a cigarette. You know you held my heart aglow between your fingertips. And just like a cigarette, I never knew the thrill of life until I touched your lips. Then, just like a cigarette, love seemed to fade away and leave behind ashes of regret. And with a flip of your fingertip, it was easy for you to forget. Oh, love is like a fingertips, it's so easy for you to forget. Oh, love is like a cigarette.
And here is something completely different, Left Field and Melt. Thank you. Before I introduce our next guest, I'd just like to inform everybody of something that's happening on Tuesday night, and it's in Madden's Bar, the Clube Hotel, and it's Ain't Misbehaving Jazz Trio are back again. And they start at 9 p.m. every Tuesday in Madden's Bar in the Clube Hotel, and that's Michael Halloran on double bass, Joe Halloran drums, and Aisling Smith on piano and vocals. And they're really, really good. I've been there, and I would recommend it to everybody. So that's starting next Tuesday. My guest now is Nora Brennan. You're very welcome, Nora.
Thank you very much, Ronya.
And Nora has an exhibition that has just opened in the Greenway Gallery across the road from us here on James Street.
That's right. We opened it yesterday, and it'll run until the 29th of May.
And is this a show of prints? Because I know you're a printmaker.
I am a printmaker, but I do a bit of painting. Not a lot, but a bit of it. So I have a couple of pieces, painted pieces in the show, but mostly they're framed prints that are there.
So Nora, you're originally from Claremorris.
That's right, and living there still. I set up a small studio in my one of the children's rooms. As they moved out, I moved up and got a bigger and bigger room. So
so now you'll be knocking the kids' rooms together to make a big studio.
That is the next plan.
Really?
Yes.
I just got
absolutely.
So you actually work with printmaking at home, which is quite unusual. People generally who work from home might be painters, as you wouldn't require so much equipment, for example, a press.
That's right, yeah. Now, when I finished college in 2011, the first thing I did was I bought a small little etching press. Very small, the size, just under an A3 size is the maximum that I can do on it. But I'm primarily, and my preference is for screen printing. So I do a lot of that as well.
And do you do it the old-fashioned way? Cutting out with the scalpel and registering and all this kind of thing?
Absolutely, yes. It's not computerised, and there's no. I don't do colour separation for the most part. If I had to, I would. But I start my prints from scratch and kind of let them evolve in the process.
So you don't have a set plan when you start to make a print. It just happens?
For the most part, no. It would be uncommon for me to start with a definite finished image in my head. I have an idea of where I want to go, but the process sometimes will lead me in a different direction. You know?
Well, I did have a look at your website before we go any further. Perhaps we should tell people about your website
right.
So that they can log on there and have a look at what we're talking about.
It's www.norabrennan.ie.
And there are some really, really good images of prints. And do you know what they remind me of? Especially the older ones. Matisse.
All right. Big influence, of course. He's wonderful.
Isn't he? He's probably one of my favourite artists.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, so that's a compliment.
Yeah. Anna, okay, can we go back to college? You said you only finished in 2011.
That's right.
And did you go to the GMIT course, the six-year degree course in Castlebar? Is that the one?
No, I didn't. While I had applied for that as well, I also applied for a full-time four-year honours degree in Clunwira in Galway. That's GMIT as well. And I got accepted on that one, so that's where I went. Travelled up and down every day from Claremorris.
And it was a full-time course?
Full-time course, Monday to Friday.
Because I was thinking, for some reason I thought you did the one in Castlebar, and I was thinking, where did the printmaking come from?
That's
because,
right.
Because most of the people who come from Castlebar generally are painters.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's due to lack of facilities.
That's right,
or
yeah. It's purely... paint there is their degree, but they would also dabble and do bits of other things as well, you know. But facilities, again, is the reason.
So what is it about printmaking versus painting?
Well, I have to say that when I went to college, I had no idea about printmaking. I had done a lino print for my portfolio purely because I was told, oh, well, you must put in some kind of print. I had no idea what printmaking was about, or the huge variety of processes that are involved. And so in first year then we did modules. There were five disciplines that we could have taken, and I took printmaking as one of those. So we did we concentrated on that for a number of weeks, and it just opened up this whole new world of possibilities for me, you know, and I just fell in love with it completely.
Is it that moment at the end where you reveal the print after the series of processes? Is that what gets you?
That's it. But I also think that the printmaking process is just, it suits the way my brain thinks and the way I like to work, I suppose.
So you'd be methodical, possibly?
Organised, yes.
Yeah.
Methodical, possibly, yeah.
Can we get back to your exhibition over in the Greenway Gallery now? How many pieces do you have there?
There are 21 pieces. Let me think. There are 7 paintings, 14 prints.
These pieces are all for sale?
They're all for sale, yes.
And so what's the exhibition called?
The exhibition's called Imagined Landscapes, and they are purely, as the name implies, from my imagination. And some of them will, and in fact all of them can be looked at as representational, but they're
there is an abstraction there.
Very much so.
Do you know Dominic Lloyd?
No, I don't.
He's also a printmaker. He lives down in Ballycroy, and he does something similar. Even though they look completely different to yours, they are prints, and they're imagined, well, not necessarily landscape, but imagined places.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's have a little piece of music, and here's Basement Jack, same old show.
Go. Thank you.
This is Gráinne O'Reilly here on the Arts Show on WRFM, and I'm joined by Nora Brennan, who's a printmaker whose exhibition is currently showing at the Greenway Artist Gallery across the road from us here on James Street. Nora has a website, and it's norabrennan.ie, and that way you'll be able to get a look at lots of her prints, and I have to say I really, really like them. What about these last ones? There's more drawing in them, isn't there, Nora?
There is, yes, they're a bit more figurative or maybe representational, even though they're very abstract.
Yeah.
And my preference is always for abstraction.
Yeah. Nora, you said that you finished college in 2011, so you went to college as a mature student. You took up art possibly a little bit later in life?
Very much so.
And
very much so.
What took you? Well, why?
Why? I suppose I worked as a catering manager. I worked in GMIT, and it wasn't doing it for me, if you know what I mean.
Not so much job satisfaction.
No job satisfaction. Hidden sales figures, and you know. All of that business stuff that it's tough to deal with. And I suppose I had the opportunity to sit back and think, what is it that I want to do with the rest of my working life, the rest of my time, you know? And art was always something that I had an interest in as a teenager when I was going to school. And I was always creative, I suppose. And I needed an outlet for that. And working in GMIT then, I saw every Wednesday the student artists coming in and working, and they'd come into the canteen for their tea or whatever, and there'd be paint on their shirts and charcoal on the fingers. And yeah, it tempted me for a long time. I used to say on a Wednesday, oh, I'd love to be just to do that, just to be able to sit down and make and create, you know. So when the opportunity arose then, I grabbed it, and that was 2006. I left work before the bust.
Right, you left your job on a Thursday and the recession arrived on a Tuesday,
yeah,
as Brita likes
like
to
that.
Say.
So I was very lucky, because if it was a year later, there was no way I was leaving a good paying job, you know. We have six children. They were just more or less starting to go into third level at that stage themselves, and I wouldn't have even contemplated it had it been any later, you know.
Do you regret it?
No, not for a minute. Financially, yeah, you know. There's no saying how much it has affected us, yes.
But you're happier.
Absolutely.
And yeah. You enjoy making work, making artwork.
Yeah, I do. It fulfills me in a way that nothing else had, you know.
Well, the art market isn't so hot at the moment, as you probably have noticed.
I have.
When you jacked in your job as a catering manager, the art market was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was very vibrant. People were buying. There were lots of new buildings going up that needed paintings on the wall. And
that's
it was...
Right.
Really, like everything else, I guess, it was really booming.
It was boom time for artists as well. Yeah, they were benefiting from all the money that was there. It was flowing all over the place.
And prices went sky high.
Absolutely. Out of reason, you know.
Yeah, people were paying actually some ridiculous money for pieces of art.
That really didn't warrant it or didn't deserve it at times.
You're right there.
Yeah.
Anyway, then the prices, as the recession started to take hold, and prices became more realistic, I suppose. But now it's gone the other way.
It is. And artists have to step back and think, well, do they drop their prices to a more realistic level? Or did they hold out in the hope? But they're not selling.
Even if they drop the prices to nearly nothing now, art is simply not selling.
Mm-hmm.
Art was once seen as possibly along the lines of gold bars, you know, as a great investment mm-hmm. that would hold its value.
Yeah, and increase in value.
And unfortunately, that isn't always the way. But here's hoping that it will recover.
I'm hopeful that as the economy picks up, which it is bound to, because there's always swings and roundabouts, that it'll pick up just enough to make things sensible, you know, not the crazy times that it was.
Yeah, a little bit of balance.
A bit of reason in it.
Can we get back to your work again?
Mm-hmm.
Is this your second solo show, I believe?
That's right. My first solo show was with the Clamars Arts Committee in Clamars, my hometown. So that was in March. I had my first solo exhibition.
And that was in the Clamars Gallery?
Not in the Clamars Gallery. The Clamars Gallery now is a privately owned gallery, and the people that are responsible for the Clamars Open Exhibition are the Clamars Arts Committee. And
okay.
It was with them that I had the show.
Oh, was that part of the Clamars Open?
No, it was it's separate. They're also the organisers of the Clamars Open.
Well, there is a fantastic gallery there, the privately owned one.
That's right.
But there's a great exhibition on there at the moment that I'd quite like to see, and that's with Aidan Crotty and Quinn and Gillian Lawler.
And Gillian Lawler,
three fantastic artists.
Yes, and it's a nice little exhibition. It's a lovely little gallery there, actually. I think is it Rosemary Noon that runs?
That's
Rosemary,
right.
Okay,
we were just talking there about the art market, and do you have any? Do you intend to remain as an artist, as a printmaker?
I do, yeah.
So what kind of plans do you have, if any, for the future? Like, what's your ambition?
I'm not hugely ambitious as in world domination or fame, because I'm a bit of a realist.
Yeah.
So what I want to do is continue doing what I'm doing, but getting more shows, bring it to a wider audience, I suppose, and maybe that way, you know, just build up a bit of a reputation for myself and become a little bit better known within this small little pool that we have here.
In the art community.
Yeah.
Well, actually, what you really want to do, ideally, will be to get your name better known outside of the art community.
Yeah, and it's a hard enough thing to do. You have to be very business minded. You have to be a very good self promoter, which probably I'm not. In fact, I know I'm not. You know, I could be a lot better.
You need a publicist.
A publicist. A manager.
Yeah, a secretary.
Yeah. Minions to do these jobs.
And while we're at it, why not somebody to clean the house?
Absolutely.
Let's have another song. Here's Simple Minds and Belfast Boy.
When my love said to me, meet me down by the gallows tree, for it's sad news I bring about this old town and all that it's suffering. Some say troubles are about, someday soon they're gonna pull the old town down. One day we'll return here when the Belfast child sings again. Brothers, sisters, where are you now? As I look for you right through the crowd, all my life here I've spent with my faith in God and church and the government. Some say trouble's about, someday soon they're gonna pull the old town down. One day we'll return here when the Belfast child sings again.
One day we'll return here when the Belfast child sings again.
This is Grainne O'Reilly on The Arts Show, and I'm still having a chat here with Nora Brennan. And we were kind of talking what to do now, you know, what to do next. And Nora just announced that she'd like to go and do her Masters in Chelsea. Why Chelsea, Nora? What's happening there?
That's right. I have heard that it's a very good Masters. It's a taught Masters, so there's no research as such involved in it. It's purely practical.
Absorbing information rather than researching.
Yeah, but also developing my own work, you know, which would be important to me, I suppose.
So you've looked into this, haven't you, Nora?
Just a little. But it's on the very long finger until I get my last child out of third level and earning on their own.
Okay, you can't just pick them up and bring them with you.
Absolutely not. That's not going to happen.
Anyway, I'd like to wish you all the best of luck with your exhibition over in the Greenway Artist Gallery, the Greenway Gallery. And it will be on until when?
Until Wednesday the 29th of May.
And it's called?
It's called Imagined Landscapes.
Imagined Landscapes. And Nora Brennan, thank you very, very much for coming in. And here I'm going to play Lou Reed, Good Night, Ladies.
Good night, ladies. Ladies, good night. It's time to say goodbye. Let me tell you now. Good night, ladies. Ladies, good night. It's time to say goodbye. Now all night long you've been drinking your tequila long, but now you've sucked your lemon peel dry, so why not get high? And good night, ladies. Ladies, good night. Good night, ladies. Oh, ladies, good night. It's time to say goodbye. Good night, sweet ladies. Ah, ladies, good night. It's time to say goodbye. Bye-bye. Ah, we've been together for the longest time, but now it's time to get high. Come on, let's get high. And good night, ladies. Ladies, good night. Oh, I'm still missing my other half. Oh, it must be something I did in the past. Don't it just make you wanna laugh? It's a lonely Saturday night. Oh, nobody calls me on the telephone. I put another record on my stereo, but I'm still singing a song of you. It's a lonely Saturday night. if I was an actor or a dancer who was glamorous, then you know an amorous life would soon be mine. But now the tinsel light of starbreak is all that's left to applaud my heartbreak. And at 11 o'clock I watch the network news. Oh, whoa, whoa, something tells me that you're really gone. You said we could be friends, but that's not what I want. Ah, anyway, my TV dinner's almost done. It's a lonely Saturday night. I mean to tell you, it's a lonely Saturday night. One more once, it's a lonely Saturday night.
Well, that was lovely to talk to Nora Brennan. There's an exhibition opened in the Linen Hall on Friday the 3rd, that's last Friday, and it's a lady by the very nice name, B. Last, and the exhibition is called Amorphous. Now, Breda, who is fantastic with the outdoor mic, did her thing and interviewed B. Last in the Linen Hall. I'll just tell you a little bit about the exhibition before I play Breda's interview. It's an exhibition of large-scale paintings, and Bea is a Scottish-based artist. And she explores, the way she explores her relationship with paint, its application and dynamics. She works with the processes of addition and subtraction, movement, memory and energy, while evolving a series of paintings concurrently. Sketchbooks are a vital part of her creative process, allowing freedom of mark without self-consciousness. The fluid energy created through these drawings are crucial to my practice and help me stay connected to the paintings that I am working on, helping to move them forward in their development. By focusing on the abstract and eliminating the figurative or narrative, I'm trying to capture the beauty in not necessarily the unseen, but that which perhaps sometimes we are too busy to see. And since 1999, B. Last has exhibited in Scotland, England, Lebanon, France, Italy and the US. And that exhibition is on in the Linen Hall at the moment. And of course, admission is free. I'm going to play now Breda Burns' interview with B. Last.
Hello everybody, we're here again in the Linen Hall with an artist all the way from Scotland, just arrived this morning, with all her lovely big work, B. Last.
Hello, hello everyone.
Welcome to, is this, you came here to do a recce last year, yeah, to look at the Linen Hall space, yeah, to bring your work.
Yeah. I came here, I'd put in a proposal to have an exhibition here a couple of years back. Lovely Linen Hall accepted, and so I came out on a bit of a research trip all the way from Dumfries and Galway, and we came for a long weekend, had a look at the art centre, met a couple of people, all very lovely, friendly folk, had a look around the area as well.
And do you think, before we talk about your work, do you think it made a difference to you working and preparing the show, the fact you came to visit the gallery first?
I think it's important to have a look at a space that your work's going into. Whether it directly influences it or not, I don't know, but it's a definite big yes. Do a bit of research, always go and have a look at where your work's going.
And, yeah, like, can I just say, it was a delight this morning to come in, and lovely big canvases walking up the stairs here in the Linen Hall. Do you want for our listeners to give a brief description of your work? I know that's hard over the airwaves.
They're basically, I'm about 5'2" and they're bigger than me, huge. They're abstract, they're monotone, they're all to do with feeling and expression. They're pure painting. It's me just loving paint.
They're dynamic. There's a lovely energy. I've heard sounds sometimes, I think, express paintings are the words.
Lines of the words. Yeah, I'm not very good at doing flowery and delicate. I'm and fading in the background. I like the work to stand out there on its own. It's about the work. It's not about me. I'm just the one that does them, but they've got to be strong enough to hold their own with the world. They're about the spectator looking at them, building a relationship with them, making their own mind up about them. For me, the important thing is about the process, the doing of the painting. I love the fact that they have an impact. I love it that they're physical. The whole physicality, the actual... For me, doing them, just manhandling them, is a big thing. I turn them around, they go from wall to ceiling, to floor, not the ceiling. So that's a very physical act.
Could you go through some of your... Say now, there's a piece here I'm looking at. It looks approximately 7 foot by 7. Mm-hmm. It's the background black with very strong white marks in it. Would this be a typical example of one of your pieces?
It's, well, example of my pieces. I think if you lined all my work up that I've done over the years, you'll see a connection from the work I did 10 years ago to the work I'm at now and where I'm going. But if you walked in to this exhibition having just seen the work of 10 years ago, you'd think, my God, that's different.
But there is a consistent link.
If you line them all up, if you looked at all the because I do record everything, because it's the process, as I said, that's important to me, I tend to work in a series as well, I kind of look at pieces and think, well, that bit works, that bit doesn't, and I'll take the best bit and move it on. But I've always got in the back of my mind, I wonder what would happen if... And always experimenting, and being curious, and playing, being joyful with it. I'm a serious artist. I've got my serious thoughts, but the building that relationship with paint is a joyful thing.
And say now, for instance, do you put these up in... I presume they're not in a needle. They're too big. Like, do you work on the ground? Do you work up on the wall?
I go between the two. I'd start off on the floor, let that process dry, then lift them, possibly turn them around. There's an awful lot of time goes into sitting and looking and being with them, not just to go charging in and just making marks willy-nilly. I think, you know, if people really understood that the paintings themselves, although they look simple... There's actually a lot of work that goes behind that.
Hard is simple.
Hard is simple because I could sit in front of a canvas.
Or simple is hard.
Simple is hard.
Hard is
simple. One of them.
Yeah, no.
But you could sit in front of a canvas for hours just thinking something's not right.
Yeah, I often
take out one line, one dot, and then suddenly it springs to life.
Paintings kind of finish themselves, like.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you try and con yourself sometimes to think, oh yeah, it's okay,
yeah.
I can leave that one,
yeah.
And you know you can't. You're haunted with it, and you will never get the next painting until you finish the last.
Well, I liken it to a conversation. So you and I, we were sitting down, we were having a chat, and there's a little bit of a something we're discussing. I'm not going to walk away from this conversation halfway through, and if I do, it's going to bug me. So
that's an interesting simile.
Yeah, and so you leave a conversation when you've arrived at a point that you know that's it. Whether you have arrived at a mutual understanding that you don't agree, you do agree, it's a point that sits well. Otherwise, you walk away and you're thinking, I should have said. Well, with a painting, it's I should have done. Or that's not right. I've got something else to say. You know, get back.
Yeah, I think
to
that's
it.
The voice that keeps you going in the back of your head, isn't it?
Yeah.
In your heart.
Yeah.
If there's somebody listening to this, because I did look up some of your work during the week, and I really enjoyed looking at it. That's why I was glad to meet you today.
Yeah.
Have you somewhere people could just look you up, and they could be looking at the work as they're listening?
If you Google Be Last, I'd love to. Quote www. But I'm useless at remembering things like that. But if you Google Be Last, either go to Be Last Artist.
That's B-E-A
and Last L-A-S-T.
I think it's like such a nice name. Like
it's a shortened version. Yeah, you'll be able to click on, there's two artist registers that my work's on. Try the one that says retitle. It's pretty easy.
Well, actually, I just looked it up and I hit images. Yeah. And actually, yeah. I straight away knew from seeing the invite, which is after the one we were talking about there, the black background from the Linen Hall. Yeah. Straight away, I knew which ones were yours because it was...
It comes up pretty quick.
Direct. Yeah. Now, something you seemed, you referred to earlier, you're very conscious of the working process and the starting point.
Yeah.
And to illustrate this, you have brought some of your sketch pads with you. Do you want to go through those?
Yeah, I've brought three sketchbooks with me that span over the last year and a half. For me, the first sketchbook is like a link to the previous set of paintings that I did. And you can see how that develops and moves through and brings you to the second sketchbook that connects with this work that's on show, moving on in, and that I take across into the third sketchbook. But right now you can see where my thoughts are spiraling off, so there's an essence of the potential of what's to come in the third sketchbook. There might be other shapes and other elements that are beginning to come in, and it's still that what if, what would happen if. So these canvases, for instance, are mainly square. There's only one that's rectangular in shape. By the time I've moved into my third sketchbook, we're moving away from squares, going into long rectangular shapes. I'm thinking, I've got ideas bursting out of my head.
But that's a lovely way to be, isn't it? Do you find, like, because I'm sure, like, some of these would have been in your studio and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's nice to get them spread out. I'm sure you're looking at them different today.
Oh, they take on another life. My studio is a really nice studio and it's a pretty decent size, but even so, it's not as big as this. You've got all your working equipment, your pots of paints. It's a working studio.
The work changes when it's in the
proper
gallery.
Yeah, it does. And you're surrounded by it. Sometimes they're getting in the way of each other and you've got to face them away so you've got a clear head. But then, suddenly they were wrapped out of my studio in the back of a van, heading off for Ireland, and I'm getting nervous.
So did you go and come on the ferry and that?
We brought them here. Oh, yeah, just man with a van, husband, lovely husband with van who's hiding. it's. I like being very hands-on. I like seeing them through.
But that'll be nice as well, because you'll be here for the opening now. This broadcast will be gone out after that, but hopefully you'll have a great night.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope lots of people come. I'm happy to talk to people about my work.
But even if people don't, I know people come through the gallery all the time. Yeah, it's here and beyond for three weeks. And, I mean, as people know, that Linen Hall, they change every month, and that's great. I must admit, it was lovely. There's a lovely energy to these, and there's a consistency, and what you say makes as much sense, and you will see the links through from the sketch pads through sketch to what's on the wall.
There's some working drawings on the wall as well. Kind of a go-between the sketchbooks and the paintings.
They're kind of more finished pieces.
Yeah, they're a tidier version of what happens in my studio. Sketchbooks I carry around with me, so I even work on those at home, and because I have to drive to my studio, the sketchbooks are what keep me connected when I'm not there. So if I'm stuck at home, I can still keep that fluid process happening. When I'm in my studio, sometimes I have a mad minute and just put something down on paper, and then the paper gets tacked up onto the wall, so I end up with part of the studio is like a drawing end, and I'll have a wall covered with paper with drawings on. The working drawings I'm putting here are kind of just a tidied up version, because this is an exhibition. This isn't like an open studio and you're coming into a working, messy studio. But it is it's kind of a pointer, a direction of this is what else goes on. And that's why the sketchbooks are here.
You're in the process of hanging them, and I think they're going to very much reflect the work that's already up, like the big square format paintings. But the small ones you're hanging at the moment, there's going to be about how many of will there be?
Well, I'm calling it my wall of 100, because there's 100 A4 size drawings.
And are these ink or acrylic?
No, it's paint. It's paint again.
Hmm. And you were saying you use a different type. You use
household paint. Yeah.
Yes, that's what it is. It's
yes. Household paint.
You were actually, we were just chatting before we started, yeah, we were saying, like, Picasso used it and it's still around.
It's still around. Household paint isn't what it used to be 20, 25 years ago when it had a really chalky consistency. Everything's been developed with new technologies. It's got a lot of plasticity in it. You'll see it. If you use paint and you get gunk around the lid, pull it off, it comes off in one strand.
Because it's a plastic medium to a certain extent, isn't
it? But then I mix things like PVA to bind it. The more you dilute a paint down, the more you're breaking up the particles of paint. You know, it's like oil paint, you'll dilute it down with linseed. If you dilute it down too much with terps, it breaks the pigment up, it will crack. The same applies, anything, you weaken it. So PVA will give it that strength and keep it bound together.
Because, I mean, years ago, the art and the scientists were, scientists were the one thing, and I mean, art is a science.
Do you know, where my studio is, there's a potter.
Is it a shared studio?
There's a cluster of us. We've each got, it's on a farm without buildings that have been converted into working studios. There's a potter, another painter not long out of art school, myself, and another empty space we're waiting for somebody to move into when we get someone. So they're each self-contained but in the same courtyard.
And what kind of scale, can I ask? Because it must be fairly big to do these large-scale paintings.
Yeah. The size of my studio?
Yeah.
It's...
That's only because I'm nosy and I like studios.
Me and measurements, I'm just thinking, you know where we're sitting here? To the office doors.
That's about 40 feet, is it?
Yeah.
And that's decent.
The ceiling is probably a bit lower, but it's a good...
Yeah, because this wall, this room in itself, the Linhall room, is, I think, 24 and a half foot by 50 from days of measurements in the past.
No, it used to be...
So you're cutting about a quarter of that off, so people can gauge that size. Well, that's decent studio size.
To give you a better idea, it used to be a stable block.
Oh, lovely.
I think I'm so fortunate because the people I rent it from, she's an artist, well established in the community. They got some funding to convert that. So she's sympathetic to the arts, basically. I did have a smaller space there when I turned up over 10 years ago, but as my paintings grew, I actually turned around and said, if you ever think about converting the stable block, I'll have it. And bless her, she did.
You might be interested in looking up sometime. Yeah. There's a Tyrone Guthrie Art Centre in Monaghan, in Ireland, and it's for northern and southern artists, and other people can come as well, but they've, all the studios are in the stable block, and it's lovely. They're lovely.
I know I'm really fortunate with this studio. The only time it will get any better is a self-build, and that's when I've won the lottery.
Okay. I think every artist's dream is a big space with light. And really, nobody ever thinks about floor coverings, heat, any of those things.
I've got lovely double glazed windows, fine skylight.
Two pairs of socks.
Two pairs of socks. I've got a kettle and a microwave.
Perfect.
Even a sofa. There's just to have an afternoon nap on.
Well, Bea, it was lovely talking to you.
Pleasure.
And we look forward to, the Linenhall does workshops with the students from around Castlebar. Yeah. And I'm dying to see how their reactions work. I think they'll be good.
Well, I'm going to leave a visitor's book here because obviously it'd be just nice to get some feedback. So anybody feel free to write what you think in there.
And I hope you enjoy your time in the west of Ireland.
I'm enjoying it. It's great. It's lovely being here.
Well, thanks a million for taking the time out of you. I know, you're dying to get that 100 up on the wall, so I leave you in peace. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks very much.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Breda and Be Last, whose exhibition Amorphous is on at the moment in the Linen Hall. I'd like to also bring your attention to another very interesting looking show that's coming up, and that's in the Dock in Carrick-on-Shannon. Now, the Dock is one of the lovely new art centres that have been, I guess, redeveloped and built over the last 10 years or so. And there is an exhibition called Emerging Artists, and it's curated by Alice Lyons. Now, the artists are Sophia Malinowski, Hilton Miller, Renata Mooney, and Benita Stoney. And people around Westport will know Benita, who is a previous guest of ours. And I should also point out that Benita is the baby of this four-person show of emerging artists. I'd also like to remind people that Ain't Misbehaving Jazz is back on Tuesday, May the 7th, and every Tuesday after that at 9 p.m. Ain't Misbehaving Jazz Trio, and that's Michael Halloran on double bass, Joe Halloran drums, Aisling Smith on piano and vocals, and that's a very nice evening out. I'm going to play now Thin Lizzy, Chinatown.
Chance if you go down in Chinatown, then you don't stand a chance if you go down in Chinatown. Laughing and crying, you know it's a fact. They're not laughing, they are crying, 'cause they won't be back. Oh no, you don't come back. That's from Chinatown. Then you don't stand a chance if you go down in Chinatown. Then you don't stand a chance if you go down in Chinatown. Chinatown is a different scene. There are people there, they are so obscene. If you see what I mean, then they've sold you the dream. Down in Chinatown, what goes up, it must come down.
This is Gráinne O'Reilly on the Arts Show here on WRFM. I'd like to thank our guests today. Started off with Francis Lanuza, who told us about his visionary art. Liz Brown and Gertie Foley, and remind people that The Field, their latest production, will open on Wednesday. That's up in St. Patrick's Primary School on Altamont Street, and St. Patrick's Drama Group. Fair play to them. They work really hard. I'd like to thank Nora Brennan, who's a printmaker, and her exhibition, Imagined Landscapes, is just opened in the Greenway Art in the Greenway Gallery across the road on James Street, and I wish Nora all the best of luck. I'd like to thank Bilast, who was interviewed by Breda over in the Linen Hall, and her exhibition Amorphous is currently on in the Linen Hall. And thank you for listening. Talk to you next week. Bye.
The legend of the phoenix, all ends with beginnings. What keeps the planet spinning? The force from the beginning. Thank you.